Hello and welcome to Two Fat Expats, where we're all about packing as much into your expat life as you can. And that's what we mean when we say fat. We mean full and overflowing. This expat podcast is listened to in over 160 countries, and we have a Facebook group with over 12,000 members. I'm Kirsty Rice. I'm an Aussie expat based in Qatar, although this week I'm in Australia. And each week I'm joined by Nikki Moffat, who's also an Aussie, and she's in Hamburg, Germany. Together we have 12 locations between us, which is a lot of which wallet has which currency in it and how many rubber bands do we need for the passport so we always have the right visas with us. How are you, Nikki Moffat?
I'm fine. Thank you, Kirsty Rice. I'm several glasses of Glühwein into the season. How's the beach and how are the Turkish beach towels?
Is it just me or does Glühwein sound like something horsey? And I never go, whereas if someone said I'm several glasses into warm alcohol on a cold evening.
Warm mulled wine? No, I don't know. Yeah. I'm not sure.
So what is Glühwein? Walk me through it. Walk me through it.
Well, I think it's warm mulled wine in some form or shape. I've never actually made it. I only sample it at my local Christmas markets. You can have white Glühwein, or you can have traditionally is a red readier color. But my local Christmas market, which I haven't tried yet, has actually a warm cranberry punch with vodka. So that'll be my next try.
That's good. Yeah, that sounds right up my alley. I wonder, so obviously the wine, the W-E-I-N is the wine and the glue is what? What is G-L-U-H in German?
I actually don't know that. So
aren't you so glad I asked you?
Very glad we prepared this in advance.
Sorry. Okay. All right, Nikki, the whole how many rubber bands do we need for the passport so we always have the right visas with us? I have no rubber bands these days because we have been in Doha for a long time. But how many rubber bands do you have keeping your passports and visas together?
Well, given we had a recent passport go through the wash, a new one, no rubber bands. Actually, this is the first time that I can remember that we're currently using no rubber bands. So I'm feeling pretty proud about that because I only have to remember 4 passports, not 5 or 6 or 7. Yes. But we have always, my whole traveling life, as far as I can remember, always had one family member with a rubber band passport, if not more than one.
And that, for people that are going, what are they talking about? And that is because you have visas applicable to some countries that are now in old passports that are no longer used, where you have to reference them when you're at customs and immigration, right?
Yeah, and I think the world is changing in that some countries accept that less, and so you need a new visa in your new passport, which can be quite a traumatic experience, as you know, if your visa's still valid and you have to then just go and explain why you need a new one.
Yes.
Sometimes in a different language can be very challenging, which I had to do for my husband. So, yes, that's correct, but it's just been one part of our expat life that I'll never forget is the rubber banded visa and passport situation.
Okay, so Nikki, we're going to follow the usual plan and format with the podcast, and we'll break it up into 5 topics, which are, of course,
geographically challenged, where we talk about the impact of having lived in more than one place. We'll also cover expat relationships, and that can be anyone you've met in your expat travels.
We'll also look at expat tech, where we look at the latest tech available to expats, and expat money, where we've got something very exciting to talk about this week.
And location, 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 where we speak to an expat living somewhere in the world as an expat and ask them the Fat 5 questions.
Okay, let's get started with geographically challenged. So, Nikki, as we are recording, it is now December 20. I'm sitting down in my bedroom in the beach house in Australia with all 4 children under the same roof. Where are you?
I'm in Hamburg, Germany, where it's the day before the shortest day of the year. And I just sent you a photo a minute ago of my current level of light.
Is that what that was? It just looks like a dark square.
It's my hallway with no lights on. And in the distance was a tiny, tiny bit of dawn, well, dawnish, and it's 8:31 a.m.
And what is your geographical challenge right now, Nikki?
Well, I think it's a cultural background for me. So I've grown up always having Christmas is summer. Christmas is about the beach. Christmas is about this and that. And, of course, you see photos and stories and movies about Christmas in the snow and in the north, northern hemisphere, and how it's cold and lovely and snowy. But, honey, that just ain't where I am. It's cold, but it's grim and it's drizzling. And there is no snow on the ground. So it does feel like Christmas because of the Christmas markets, for which I am eternally grateful. And I was just speaking with a friend yesterday about how Germany and Europe, you know, does tasteful, good Christmas. It does good Christmas, but it just doesn't feel like Christmas to me. And also, because people are moving around a lot, I've been reading about how there are Northern Hemisphere people living in the Southern Hemisphere feeling that, you know, a warm Christmas is just not right. And I just don't think they're right, Kirsty. What do you think?
I think that I have changed over the years. So I remember when I first started being an expat and you would, you know, go to places at Christmas time, whether you were in Asia or whether you're in North America or whatever, but you would be hanging out with other Northern Hemisphere people who would basically tell you that you just don't do Christmas properly because you don't have snow, and that, you know, that's why Santa wears the big fat suit, and that's why there's snowmen, and that's why you have the big roast turkey dinner, and, you know, that it all is cold weather centric, do you know, that it's meant to, that's what it's all meant to be. And I must admit, there was an element of me, because, you know, you don't think about that as an Australian kid growing up. You just, it never crosses your mind, you know, that you just think that Christmas is summer. It's the end of the school year. It's this massive, you know, like it really is that spin dryer that just goes, woo, 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 gets faster, 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 and then stops dead at Christmas. It wasn't until I sort of started traveling as an expat that I'd started maybe, and it's not shame, but also a part of, you know, why did we take on all of those, you know, cold weather centric traditions? You know, why does Santa still wear the big suit? And why do, you know, I've been to the Christmas decoration shop with my son today, and, you know, he wanted to get a snowman, and he wanted to get, you know, these things that to him represent as well, you know, it makes, because he's a child that grew up in Canada and then, you know, spent some time there, and then he's had sort of winter Doha Christmas, which really isn't that cold. But then he's had Christmas here. So I guess we just adapt, don't we? We don't even think about it. But so for me, I think now, to a very long-winded way of answering your question, but to me now, I'm insanely proud of our beach warm weather Christmas. I think it is fantastic. And I love that you do see Santa in the back of a ute, or what, you know, the North Americans would call a truck, and that he has a beer, and that he goes to the beach, and that you have seafood. And yeah, we still do the warm lunch, you know, as if it, you know, we still do cook the turkey, even though it's 45, but that's all part of the beauty of it, right? Is that you do have your father swearing in the hot kitchen, you know, why the bloody hell are we cooking this turkey? You know, it's 45 bloody degrees. Do you know, that's all part of the beauty of it.
Or you do it on the Weber or outside, you know, so it's a barbecue turkey, you know, and then you have salads with your hot veggies as well. Like, it's a mix.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So I guess to all those people who say, you know, and like you said, Nikki, you really start to hear it from now Northern Hemisphere people that are in the Southern Hemisphere saying, oh, it's just not Christmas because there's no snow, and it can't be Christmas if it's hot, and if you're not bundled up in front of the fire. I say to those people, it's just not Christmas if the cricket isn't on the telly and that men and women aren't covered in zinc cream passing out in the heat, and it's just not Christmas if you're not paying $150 for a lobster tail. And it's just not Christmas if there's not a brand new beach towel from grandma underneath the Christmas tree. Like, all of those things are Christmas to us.
Yeah, I agree. And one time when we were in the States, Willow had to give a talk at school about a tradition in her country, a holiday tradition. And I said, Boxing Day. And she said to me, what's Boxing Day? And I said, okay, it's the best day of the year. Oh, it's God, a day yes. you eat leftovers all day. It's the day you watch the cricket and the start of the Sydney to Hobart. And yep. you have a outside game of backyard cricket, and you have friends and family involved. And I said, it's really, really the best day of the year.
Boxing Day is the best day of the year, isn't it? And my mum said that to me the other day. I was saying something about, because my parents will drive down to us on Christmas Eve for Christmas Day, and I said something about Christmas Day, and my mum said, well, you know, your father, it's really just about Boxing Day. Because all yeah. you want to do is just sit on the couch with the cricket on and eat all of the food he's been given for Christmas, all the chocolates yeah. and all the naughty stuff, and just have leftovers all day. And everyone relaxes and nobody feels they have to do anything. It is the favourite day, isn't it?
Yeah, it's perfect. So, yeah, and I just want to remind those Northern Hemisphere listeners who are missing the snow, it's not always snowing. FYI. Sometimes it's just dark and drizzly and cold.
Yes. Well, I know in Canada, you know, we would have in Calgary, you could have 3 weeks of, you know, minus 20 degrees, right? But the weirdest thing was is you could have snow and cold and freezing in December, and then this Chinook would come in, and I can remember there was yeah. one here, it was something like plus 17 in Calgary.
That's just wrong. I mean, that's when you do get out the garbage bin, the rolly wheelie garbage bin, and show all your neighbours how to play backyard cricket.
Yes, yes. Oh, dear. But, yeah, the Sydney to Hobart, which is, of course, is the yacht race, but the big one is the Boxing Day test at the MCG, which and at the moment in Australia we are playing the Indians in the cricket at the moment, and they won the first test in Adelaide. We won the second test in Perth, and so now the Boxing Day test is just even bigger than Ben-Hur, because it will be the decider of who wins the series. It's just huge.
That's so exciting. It's always so disappointing if it's raining in Melbourne on Boxing Day, because it really leaves a big gap in the TV viewing for the day.
Well, I think they're saying 35 degrees here on Christmas Day, which I can't convert that fast enough, Nikki, for those who operate in a different weather pattern than the rest
That's
of us.
In the 90s.
Yes. I've got a feeling Boxing Day is 39, which is close to 100.
Yeah, no, it is. I think 37 is 100. Yeah, nice.
So tell me, Nikki, what are some of the traditions of Germany for Christmas? Do they open their presents the day before or the day of, or how does it work for them?
Well, so on December 6th, which is very early in the season, if you ask me, all the German children, they polish their boots and clean their shoes, and they leave them out for St. Nicholas. And then they wake up, on the 5th. And so they wake up on the 6th, and their shoes, which is, I can't think how helpful that is health-wise. But anyway, their shoes are overflowing with things like fruit and nut and chocolate. And it's all it's kind of like they get little things, little presents.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but then they get their, I think they do Christmas Eve, they do gifts as well. So Christmas Day is gift past gifts. So, yeah, that's the deal. That's the Christmas spirit here. I'm always grateful when we move to a new country and my kids are old enough that I don't have to adopt every single thing as we move around because you can pick up a lot of things. I'm very thankful we never got an elf on our freaking shelf. That's the thing I'm most grateful for.
I think that's one of the things about expat life, isn't it, too, of that when you're at international schools and things, you know, these things come up of, well, you know, why doesn't Santa come to our house on the 5th of December? Or why doesn't Santa go to Ibrahim's house at all? How does that work? And there are some really interesting conversations that come out of it of culturally and what happens in different people's houses and what they believe.
And there's some lovely traditions that you learn about too. So, you know, at the school this year they did, you know, the Swedish, I think Scandinavian, Denmark, Sweden and Norway do a thing on the 16th. Or the 15th, I don't know, it was the day before school finished, I think, and so it was earlier than that. And they have, like, they do a little procession and they dress as angels and carry candles. Do you know what that's called? Aww. So we're screaming right now, that's called at me. And so that's very sweet. So they did that, the kids did that through the school, all the Scandinavian kids dressed up, little kids, and did one of those sort of walks through the school, which was very sweet. So it is nice that the kids get exposed to different traditions as well, even though it may leave it to an earlier discussion about Santa.
So tell me, do you think that if Germany had turned on the snow for you and you were having a lovely white Christmas, do you think it would have affected, you'd be a little bit more forgiving of the situation right now?
Look, I'm forgiving of the situation because I take it in my expat life. I know that nothing is forever. So I think I'm not going to have these Christmases every year. So I should just enjoy what's here. But yes, I mean, I think snow can make everything better in a way. As you know, from Calgary, it can make everything worse as well. But I mean, we don't have the extreme temperatures that you had in Calgary. And we also don't have the amount of snow. So if we ever get snow, it's just a few inches or a foot tops.
Yeah.
Really, it's very extreme to have more than that. And so it's just enough to be on the ground. It doesn't disrupt anything. People can make snowmen. And it takes sort of a few days before it gets a bit yucky. You know how snow gets yucky before it melts. So, look, snow is lovely. Snow is beautiful. And I'm Australian. I haven't had a lot of access to snow in my life. So I feel snow is perhaps more magical than perhaps Northern Hemisphere people do. So I look at it maybe a bit differently.
And do you think that maybe because this time last year you had a trip to Bali planned on the 26th of December, do you think that you'd probably be a little bit happier if maybe that was happening?
Yeah. And I don't know all these people on Instagram who are now in Australia and Thailand and all these good places. Yeah, look, if I was flying out on the 26th to a warm location with sun, then I think, I'd probably have a different attitude. It's just been grim this week. But I've been to a Christmas market every day. I'm not giving up.
And I think, Nikki, you and I have talked about this before. We are both people that are affected very strongly by the sun. We need sunlight. We both thrive on it. We don't like living in dark houses. We don't like being in dark spaces. We like lots and lots of light. It's a big deal to us. So, we're talking to you right in the middle of the darkest time of the year in more ways than one. Okay, we'd love to hear from any of you out there who are going through your holidays and maybe are in somewhere completely strange and where you're feeling it and feeling geographically challenged. Shoot us a message. Go to twofatexpats.com and you'll see a little microphone button. It's as easy as leaving a voicemail. Just press on down on the microphone button and tell us where you are and why you're feeling a little geographically challenged. Okay, Nikki, expat relationships.
Right. So I have been reading my book, Safe Passage Across Networks.
Yes.
Diligently. And it has so many tabs and post-it notes and highlighted bits. In fact, there are some pages where the whole thing's highlighted because I just think it's quite amazing. I mean, it's all stuff that you know to be true, but to see it all written down and sort of specked out like this is really, it's quite amazing. And you think about an international school. So to go back to it, so it's called Safe Passage Across Networks, How Mobility Affects People and What International Schools Should Do About It. And it's written by a guy, Doug Otto, who was a counselor in an international school, the American School of The Hague, for 17 years, and he put in place this fairly comprehensive program. And what this book does is give a background on what his life was and what the life of international people who move internationally and international schools are. And then he sort of breaks down the program that his school has run and said, you know, this doesn't work for everyone, but here's what you can do. And here's why the program has benefits. And here are some of the obstacles and here are some of the issues. And here is how you can do it in your school. If you want to take bits from this program, don't take bits. Do what you want. And it sort of breaks down every single part, and then it has letters to every person involved in the program. So at the end it has a letter to the students, to the parents, to the teachers, to the counselor. And it just has all these, so many drops of wisdom or whatever the word is. And I just, everything about it makes me want to just take it and show people all the time. I'm always getting it out of my bag. It's like, look, just in this book, I've got this quote I can give you. I think what it reinforces to me is that we've talked about moving before. So, you know, the physical act of it, but that's actually a little bit separate to leaving. And this book focuses a lot on leaving. So you have to leave well to arrive well.
And how do you leave well?
Well, that is a tough thing, right? So to leave well is, it needs a combination of lots of people all together, right? And it needs, you have to fully close, not close, but you have to accept, it's all about grief, basically. You have to accept that there is grief in moving and what benefits you've got from being there and what are your concerns about moving and then having to address them and then moving. And part of it is that a lot of us as parents, and I know not everyone that listens is a parent, but there are a lot of school teachers that also listen to this, international school teachers, we kind of accept that if our kid goes into an international school, what the benefits are. But it wasn't until I read this that it really made me think about what the mission statement of the IB program is, which is that aims to develop inquiring, knowledgeable and caring young people who help to create a better and more peaceful world, intercultural understanding and respect. And this book says that, and it's like, it feels sort of mind-blowing, but it's not. But when an IB school, an international school, is done right, it really can make a massive difference in your child's life, not only for what they learn while they're there, but their move into it and their move out of it. So I think about leaving well is you have to leave well to be able to arrive and to be able to sort of get your mind around going to the next one. So you have to say a real and authentic goodbye to people and places you care about.
Yeah.
And you can't avoid or cushion this process. So you can't sort of try and protect yourself or your children from feeling the grief that a goodbye does bring, and that you have to acknowledge that your children have, or that you also, I mean, you understand what you go through when you leave. And so I think that you have to understand that a child, that they go through that as well, but they go through it in a different way to you. And often what the book talks about is that children have to speak to the adults and remind them about what it was and what it feels like as a child. And parents have to not, and teachers have to not belittle them or try and say, you know, it'll be all right, we've done it before. You have to accept that every time is different, and that when you do it, you have to do it properly, and you have to acknowledge uncomfortable feelings, and you just have to be uncomfortable and be grieving. And that's really hard for people who want to try and make everything happy or better or, you know, when you're moving, often parents are very busy because they've got lots of jobs to do. Whereas with the kids, they don't have as many jobs to do. They've just got a lot of time to sit around thinking about, oh, my God, I'm leaving. And these are all the things that are going to be different and it's going to be very hard for me.
Yeah.
And with this, if there's a program in place at a school, they actually go to the children and they say, they give them surveys and they say, you know, departing students, what are my actions? Am I actively doing things to say goodbye to the people I care about here? Mm. How am I feeling? I feel very sad about leaving. How true is that on a scale of 1 to 7, 1 to 8? My thoughts, am I gradually getting ready to leave? Am I doing all the things I need to leave properly? Because you've got to accept the leaving and then go through the steps.
Yes.
So it is a bit of a grief process. And, you know, it's not easy and it's going to be different every single time.
And I think as a broad sweeping statement, that you would have to say that a lot of international schools do arrivals very well and do leaving particularly badly. So in my experience of having kids arrive and leave, I think that arrivals at our school were great, as in that there's counsellors, there's, you know, if any, everybody's given a buddy, do you know, everyone's walked through the process, you know, it's all handled very well. I would say that there's been a major fail on the international schools part of my children leaving. And it's things like, so when you leave our international school, one of the things you have to do is take a form with you, like this approved form that has the name of all your teachers, and they have to sign off that you're leaving. And the reason you're doing that, I had thought initially when it was given to my first child, I thought, oh, she has to do that so that they're all aware that she's leaving, so that, you know, they can all say goodbye and that they're all understanding of the fact that this is her last, you know, week and her last thing.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's because if you don't get it all signed by everyone, you know, you've got to hand up all your technology, and that they want all your technology back and they want to know what's going on. And also because if you don't hand it back, you get threatened with this, we're not going to give you your reports and you won't have, you know, your results. We'll keep them from you, which I find just astounding, right? Like when you look at the cost involved of an international school and the trauma that a child is going through already and a parent at that stage, right? And so with my first child, she had been there since grade four. She began year 10. And she said the reaction of many teachers was, oh, are you leaving? Oh, I had no idea you were leaving. Oh, well, there you go. Do you know, like it was a real... Nothing. Yeah. Anyway,
make sure you give back that USB stick.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Where's your laptop? and the ID card, the big one, you know, you've got to hand over that dragon card. So I think it can be done really badly. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, Nikki, so that's expat relationships and schools and safe passages. Did you feel, having looked at and not making it too personal, but did you feel that your school was doing it right?
I think they've got a great groundwork, and I think lots of schools that are doing it, trying to do it, have more in place than they imagine. But as you say, a lot of them focus on arrivals. So, you know, there are arrivals and there are stayers and there are leavers. So the leavers need their own thing. The stayers need their own thing. You know, the stayers who've had the same best friend for 3 years, suddenly not there anymore. They're walking around the hallways. To most people, it looks like nothing's changed for them. But in fact, their whole world has changed because their dynamic has changed and their day-to-day has changed. And so, you know, there's so much transition going on within an international school that it's quite freaky.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, you know, I'm preaching to the choir and the converted and everything. Mm. But it just really, reading the book really makes you think about it.
That is such a good point about the stayers, Nikki. That is a really good point because, you know, we don't think about those people. You know, we have, as expat adults, we have this whole conversation about, is it easier being the leaver or the leavee, right? And I always say it's easier being the leaver because you're moving on to something new and you're busy and you're thinking about where you're going next. You know, we've spoken about this before. The leavee gets stuck and they see your car drive past and you're not in it and they cry for a day. Do you know, there's the constant reminder that friends have gone. But that's it. The kids.
And leavies, and how many times have people, long-term expats, said, oh, I'm closed for new friends? Adults said, I don't really want to make new friends because, you know, all my friends leave. And you have to think about that from the point of view of a kid experiences exactly the same feelings and emotions.
Yes, yes.
Perhaps at a broader scope, as in they've got bigger highs and lows than you do.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's good. Okay, I think we'll come back to that book again, Nikki. It's almost like we need to do a chapter a week. Expat tech, Nikki.
We don't really have a massive thing to discuss this week, but just in case there's some people in the world that haven't worked it out yet, there's been a lot of wonder and awe and excitement about discovering the iPhone space bar is like a cursor.
Yes, I have seen that everywhere from now it's not Regis and Kelly anymore, is it? It's who's on with Regis and Kelly? It's
I think it's Michael. Yes, I think his name
yes,
is Michael.
Yes, I've seen that little clip has gone around and around and around. Do you know what? It was almost like for 2 weeks we had the did you know if you put your finger on the space bar and held it there that you could go anywhere, you know, you could move your cursor anywhere. And then it was almost like the world worked out, well, hang on, some people still aren't getting it by that description. We need a video. Let's make a video. Okay, who's got a video of someone doing it? And then we had Kelly and Michael showing us how to do it. And, you know, that's when these expressions, these American, oh, my God, mind blown.
But it is, of course, and I've got an Android, so I quickly got out my phone and pressed the space bar, I held it down. I thought, oh, yeah, it's a similar kind of thing. But it's not the same. That has to be life-changing. A lot of people have said to me it's a life-changing tip, so I feel it's only fair that we should share it just in case there's someone in the world that doesn't know it yet.
Okay, we'll make sure it's in the running sheet. Now, expat money. This is exciting. I'm very, very excited about this. So, Lookie, each week you and I have struggled our way through expat money, talking about different tips and bits and whatever, but feeling that we were grossly unprepared for the role. So
But very keen and interested very in keen sorting and interested. It out and knowing more about it.
Yes, but knowing that we needed an expert. And so for a little while we've been auditioning expat experts and we found Mr. X, as in get it, Mr. Expat.
Mr. Expert. Expat.
So in the new year we are going to bring in the professionals. So we will have Mr. X who will come in and he will answer any of your money questions, and that might be about mortgages as an expat, it might be about money saving exercises as an expat, it might be about expat tax, it can be anything money related for the expat. And Mr. X has over 20 years experience working as a money guy for expats. We will not be disclosing his identity because, Nikki, you and I are very big on that we want this to be fiercely independent. We do not want to be hocking anyone any, you know, programs with specific banks or whatever.
Products
or whatever. That is not what we want to do. We want to keep it that it's independent, and we feel that the only way we can do that is not to have an affiliation with anyone. So Mr. X has very, very kindly offered to answer all of your questions without doing that. And, of course, if you wanted to contact him, we would find a way for you to contact him. But he will remain anonymous on the podcast. So, yes, I am so excited about that. But we need you to now think about what are your money questions? What would you like to know? What would you like Mr. X to answer for you about expat money? And, of course, head over to the website, twofatexpats.com, click on the microphone button and leave your question for Mr. X.
So, location, location, location. Curtsy, the letter R, we're just powering through this alphabet. R is for Rosario, and I really don't think I pronounced that correctly. But if I said that R is for Rosario, would you know where that was?
No, I've got no idea where Rosario is. Where is it?
It's in Argentina. So we're going to South America, which we don't go there very often, so that's exciting. So Sabine is French, and she met an Argentinian while living in Spain. And then in 2008, during the financial crisis, she decided to move to Argentina with him. And she's lived in Rosario for nearly 9 years. They have two children who are 4 and 5, which are busy times. And I spoke to her about the whole thing. So we can have a listen now.
Rosario, which is a very big city in Argentina, the second, sometimes it's the third city in the country, which is right in the middle of Argentina. And Argentina being a huge country, it's pretty much in the middle of nowhere.
Okay, so it's not coastal. Is it on a river or a lake?
A river. There's a very big river going through the city, which actually is a river that starts in Brazil kind of people knowing about a little bit about sites in Argentina, there's a big site called the Iguazu Falls, and that's the same river that goes through the Iguazu Falls, which is like Nagaya Falls, like huge fall on the border with Brazil and Argentina. So that's the same river that goes all the way.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your current level of in love with the city?
It has changed really a lot in those 9 years. I started here really hating the city. It's not the prettiest city. And I got here right at the end of the summer, starting of autumn, winter. And it was kind of fairly cold winter, which is not really cold compared to Europe. But still, I wasn't prepared for that. And so at first, the first year, I really didn't like the city. And as soon as the following summer came up, and the river is a beautiful spot in the city where there's a lot of things to do and activities on the river. And actually it really changed my mind about the city and realized actually there's a lot of things to do and it is a nice place.
Okay. And so you didn't like it then. What are you giving it now?
I would say 8, 8.5.
And is that up or down on 12 months ago?
Oh, on the 9 years, upward. I would have said it would be like 4, 3 or 4. Okay. Now I really, I had to learn how to love the city. It's been a lot of different things, but having children as well here. So I have 2 children that were born here. And that really made me look at the city a different way. Thinking, you know, all the kind of activities that we can do. And actually there's a lot of things that we're able to do on weekends. And it's just so nice to be able to stay within the city and be able to do lots of different activities.
Perfect. What's your best local find?
I would say going back to the children's activity, there's a couple of museums here which are really orientated towards children and children's activity. One is a half open air and half like kind of underground rooms. I've once posted on Instagram, this is saying that it was probably one of the best children's museum in the world. It's so good. And with my girls, we spend like 6-7 hours the whole day in there. And we go there every, like in the summertime, every month, because they want to go and do the activities again. So for me, that was a huge discovery. There's 2 of those museums for children. And it really, yeah, made me appreciate the city even more, having children here and living here.
Aha, perfect. Okay. What drives you crazy?
Pollution, I would say. Yeah. It's not the kind of pollution that you would get in, like, when I read the stories of people living in China. But it's a fairly big city. There's cars and trucks are not the kind of brand new type of vehicles. So, you know, there's like fumes coming out of cars and that kind of thing. And it's just sometimes it's just difficult to get out of the city and feel fresh air.
Uh-huh.
Going on the riverbank is a good way. Yeah, the kind of pollution, noise pollution in the city and pollution, like physical pollution in the city.
Fair enough. What's one place you'd love to live?
I have my eyes on Costa Rica now, so I don't know why. I keep saying to everyone, I'm moving to Costa Rica next year. I don't know if I'm moving to Costa Rica. I really want to go on a holiday first. We are in the summer now, so this summer, in January, February, I want to go to Costa Rica and see the country and see if I like it. I don't know, maybe not. I don't know. I want to go and see it.
Perfect. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given about your expat life or living this way of life that you do?
I would say it probably would be around the language. That was one thing that I was very worried when my first expatriation, or the first time I moved abroad, moved to London. And I was so worried about not being able to speak good English and making mistakes. And it really stopped me the first few months in doing things because I was so shy and worried that I would not even talk to people. I wouldn't even try talking to people. I realized that I wanted to be able to connect with people. And the only way was not to worry about the language and, you know, mistakes that you make and that kind of thing. And just be myself and communicate in whatever way I can with people. So that's what I love fairly early on.
What's the biggest lesson that you've learned?
Lesson? Not to worry too much about the outcome, but to enjoy what's there now, what's happening at the moment.
And do you have an example of that you can think of?
Well, my first few months in here in Rosario, I was questioning myself, well, what, if whether I have had made the right decision, if I wanted to stay or wanted to go. And until I got to a point where I decided it was a conscious decision that I wanted to enjoy the time that I'm, you know, the time that I'm having, that the time that I'm spending here in the city. And whether I decide in a few months to move, but I want to have a good time now. And that's when I realized that actually I picked up a couple of activities, like doing yoga, met up some friends, and life got much better.
One last question we ask now is, we do recommendations at the end of the podcast about books we're reading or movies or TV shows we're watching or podcasts we're listening to. Do you have a recommendation that you'd like to share for something like that?
I love books. Thinking just one book, which is from Rachel Hollis, Girl, Wash Your Face.
Yeah, Girl, Wash Your Face, did you say?
Yeah, which is about maybe a bit about what I said earlier, taking actions on what you want now in your life to feel like you're actually making progress in whatever decisions that you know, personal or professional decisions that you want to take, but to think about what makes you happy, what do you want in life, to be able to live the present is as a more serene, in a happier state. So that's what the book is about.
That was absolutely brilliant. Nikki, I think, you know, we've talked about before that whole thing of you say you're not meeting anyone or you're not enjoying a place, and then you realise, well, you're really not going to meet anyone sitting on your bum on the couch complaining, that you kind of have to get out of your comfort zone and make yourself do those things. And Sabine was just, you know, just such great advice for how to push on and live the life you want to live and you making it happen. I thought it was brilliant. Really enjoyed that.
Yeah, where she said, look, I'm not like yet, I might leave in a few months, but before that I'm going to make sure I enjoy something about it. I thought that was a really good a mindset thing, you know, because it's so hard. When you don't like a new place, it's so hard.
And it goes back to people that accept short-term assignments and then they don't cement themselves into places because, oh, you know, we're only going to be here 12 months. What's the point of joining that club or learning how to do that sort of skill or getting too close with those people? And then all of a sudden you get to the 11-month mark and you're like, I have wasted my entire time on this location or at this location because I just haven't lived it. Yeah, just really great advice. Okay, Nikki, moving right along into our reading and eating and listening and watching and whatever.
I've got a question for you, Kirsty. Last time we spoke, you talked about your Christmas cooking and how you were going to be one of those people or that person that baked Christmas goods as gifts to give her out.
We have gone nuts. It's good. It's good. So I tell you, I've had to kind of struggle to even get into my own kitchen because it appears my children have had the same plans. So my eldest has definitely been that person. She has made hundreds of cookies, like hundreds of cookies that she, in the shape of stars, you know, the lovely little sugar cookies with the icing sugar on the top of them. And she's made little stars and put them in bags. And this is all tied in with her also getting her driver's license. So she then delivers those cookies to friends all over the city while she's at it. So she's made gingerbread men as well. Tonight is my night. And no, I am not making the cranberry crumble bars because my cranberries have been stolen from me because my son, as we speak, is standing in the kitchen making Rocky Road.
Oh, he's using the cranberries for Rocky Road.
He's using the cranberries for the Rocky Road. So I am making, and I haven't included the recipe, but I will, from the Donna Hay Christmas cooking book, I am making caramel crunch. It's like a caramel with a chocolate layer that's like a brittle. So I'm making that and it breaks off in little shards. So it doesn't have to be perfectly shaped. It's all going to come out in all different bits and pieces. I'm going to put it in little, I've bought little Christmas bags and some Christmas ribbon and I will be handing that out this weekend. There's one other thing I will be doing on Christmas Eve, because I have a Nutella monster in my house, my youngest son is a Nutella freak, is I don't know if you've seen it, Nikki, and I will include the video from the Evening Standard, where you can make a Christmas tree out of puff pastry with two pieces of pastry with Nutella in between, and then you cut it into a Christmas tree, twist the sides of it so it looks like little twisted, you know, Christmas branches, and then you put little M&Ms for the baubles at the end. So I will include that video. Oh,
we don't need to see that in our house, because I can imagine what will happen there.
Do you have a Christmas theme at your house, Nikki? Like, you are a very good decorator. Your house is always beautiful. Do you do a Christmas theme?
Well, I don't. And I go to other people's houses here and I've seen, you know, they have got Christmas trees and all the decorations are white or versions of white and silver. And I think, oh, God, you know, that's a bit much. I really, which I didn't enjoy when I was little, and I told my parents in no uncertain terms their decorating style, and I really don't feel I've got a style, but I really enjoy getting out all the things that we've got from different places over the years. So I've got some wooden Christmas decorations from South Africa that I really love, and then I've got some really funny sort of that I think are more sort of kitschy American things. That's it. I'm calling Santa. I've got this sign that I put up in the hallway, and you know, just things like that, and just sort of the overall decorating. And it's sort of a bit of mishmash, and you know, it doesn't all necessarily go together. But it reminds me of all the different places we've lived and places that the things we've done, and yeah, that's my style, the mishmash style.
Yeah,
or we call it the expat style.
I'm into the stars this year. Everything's stars. So, our house, because we've got a new house, it is very much in that new house theme. It's very Scandi. Do you know that whole sort of look about it? So, yes, the wooden decorations are very much the thing.
Yep.
But I did have that twitch that you have when your children decide to help you decorate.
Oh, I had, yes.
Oh my gosh. And you've got all your lovely wooden stars and they want to pick from the Christmas shop this disgusting silver, you know, snowman that does not mix with anything that you've got. And then my husband is completely gone full Griswold with the Christmas lights out the front. So we've got Christmas tree solar lights. We've got the reindeers, you know, out the front.
Oh, we'll have to have a photo for our FedExpats Instagram account.
Okay, so moving right along, Nikki, books that we're reading. I'm reading the Michelle Obama book, which you've already talked about, so I won't go into that anymore. What are you reading?
Well, I'm reading a couple of articles, so you've inspired me on the article front, and Christmas is not for books until after Christmas. But The Guardian did an article about all the data Facebook and Google has on you. I don't know if you saw that, but it was truly horrifying.
Yes, that was very good.
And I think that, you know, we've talked about this before and we accept that everything we do online can be made public at any time. And, you know, we're fairly open about that and free and easy about that. But it does make you feel a little bit uncomfortable when you read all that stuff. And I've noticed more and more there are ads for VPNs popping up on podcasts. You know, if you don't want Google to know everything you're Googling, then you should have a VPN to protect you, you know, so they can't necessarily tie it into you, which I think is an interesting, it's not just for maybe looking at things in different countries. And the other thing about that is that, you know, things like Find My Kids, which we all find so, you know, helpful. Oh, where's my daughter? Where's my child now? You know, they said they'd be home now. Where are they? Oh, I see. They're moving. They must be on the train at this spot, whatever. My daughter has been terrified by her school friends, in inverted commas, telling her stories about, you know, people hacking and stealing her away using her location services. So she's always turning them off. And as a parent, when she's coming home from basketball practice at 7 o'clock on a Thursday night, I kind of wanted to have them on. So we have this argument, you know, like when you're coming home, when you're not at school, you know, when you're not at home and you're coming home and I need to know where you are, you need to turn your services on. Otherwise, when I turn on Find My Kids, it says her phone is off, you know, or her location is not on. I think, I don't like that. But when she has it on, it's quite true then that someone somewhere, like a machine, is tracking every single thing that she does. So, you know, it's a win-lose catch-22 situation. So it's an interesting article. It just makes you think about those little things in your life that you find so easy and helpful, but in fact someone's making a note of them somewhere. One day it might come back to haunt you. And the other thing I read was a great article, which you would have read in your New York Times thing about, it was a New York Times article about having a conversation. So you talked recently about a podcast, about the art of conversation.
Yes, about a TEDx talk
TEDx talk. And this was an article called How to Talk to People, according to Terry Gross, who is an NPR host.
She's fabulous, Terry Gross. Yep.
So it just gives you 8 tips about how to talk to people, and not necessarily in an interview. It could be someone you're finding, you know, sitting next to at a dinner party, or someone you first met. But it does say one thing. Did you read the article?
No, I haven't read it yet. I did see it, but I haven't. I've got it in my little saved file on my iPad to read later. Tell me, what did it say?
So just one of the things is, it says, tell me about yourself is the only icebreaker you'll ever need. So you shouldn't ask someone, which we are big advocates of, what do you do? Why are you here? You know, that kind of stuff. You know, because they're more close-ended questions, and they can lead to, you know, difficult answers or people feeling sort of unable to answer. But I can't imagine sitting next to someone I've never met at a dinner party and saying, tell me about yourself.
So tell me about yourself. Yeah, it's kind of, no, it doesn't feel genuine, does it? It's not something that's going to come out of my mouth. No, I'm with you.
Yeah. The article says there are only 4 words you'll need to navigate a potentially awkward conversation, whether on a blind date or at a cocktail party. The beauty in tell me about yourself is it allows you to start a conversation without the fear that you're going to inadvertently make someone uncomfortable or self-conscious, except maybe yourself, because saying tell me about yourself. I just think there must be a better way for me to say that. I don't know if someone else feels comfortable saying that, but that's just something I don't. Tell me about yourself. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's certainly what you're always getting at when you talk to people. It's what you want to know. But I kind of feel you have to ask different questions to get there. But anyway, maybe I'll try it.
Yeah. I don't know. I think I probably start a lot of conversations with, so tell me, and then probably a wildly inappropriately personal question. But I would never say, so tell me a bit about yourself, or tell me about yourself.
Hi, Mark.
Yeah.
Tell me. Mark. Tell me about Mark. No.
Oh, dear. I actually said to my daughters the other day, when it was the 3 of us and the boys were on their way home, power went out, so we had no power, had to get out of the house to feed them. Went down the road to a very cute little place for breakfast, but crazy expensive. So, and the reason I tell you this is probably the fact that it was crazy expensive and that I had work to do and whatever, and I was sitting there thinking, I'm expecting more from my company with you two girls than you two just sitting there gazing out the window. And so I said to them, girls, do you think the art of conversation has been lost? insert eye roll and sigh from both of them. but it did work. We did start talking, because I think sometimes, you know, teens just need a little reminder. One of the best things I've ever heard was on the Don't Shoot the Messenger podcast, which is, you know, my favorite.
Oh, my God. It must be at least 3 episodes.
But I haven't spoken to them. One of my favourite things, and I'm sure I've said it before, was, you know, never be insulted by the silence of a teenage boy. It totally works with a teenage girl as well. You know, there is just this, I don't know what it is with teenagers. They don't feel that silence. Do you know, they don't feel that need to feel the silence either. I think that comes back to you in your 20s, doesn't it, where you go, oh, well, if I'm sitting here, I probably should really try and feign some interest in you. Yeah. But, no, we did get there in the end, and we did start talking about things, and we did. But I think you need to sometimes point it out of, okay, this is conversation time.
I do notice that. And then I think, I say to my son, what's wrong? Why aren't you talking? You don't look happy. And I think, what am I doing? And he's like, no, I'm fine. I'm fine. I'm just sitting here. Are you tired? No, I'm not tired. Oh, shut up. I think, just be quiet. You're making things worse in my head. But I'm the one who can't leave the the gap, as you say. But yeah, okay. So what about, what are you watching?
So I've got a couple of movies that I watched on the plane. One was Crazy Rich Asians, and I know, Nikki, you've spoken about it before. I think I did that thing where I was so excited to see it that I was a little bit let down. It was quite the controversy in our household because I dared to say to my son, oh, I don't know, I thought it was a bit overrated. And when he went bananas, he thought it was the best movie ever. He thought I was racist because I was saying that because it was, a full Asian cast. And I said to him, no, that was one of the things I really enjoyed. I loved that it was a full Asian cast. What I found ridiculous was having lived in Asia and travelled to Singapore so many times and travelled to suburban, I guess, if you want to say, Singapore, I just thought it was so untrue to how the average Singaporean lives and so far from how this average Singaporean lives. And, of course, and I was, quickly told, that what it was all about. That's why it's called Crazy Rich Asians. What were you thinking? But, yes, I thought it was good, but I think maybe I had got so excited about it and was so looking forward to it, I just thought it was a bit meh. And I also watched Christopher Robin, not to be confused with how I've spoken about Goodbye, Christopher Robin, but this was the Christopher Robin with Ewan McGregor where, the stuffed animals actually looked like stuffed animals. It was cute. It was really cute. And we've all now watched it, all enjoyed it. A 12-year-old son said it made him cry. He thought it was beautiful and he loved, that Christopher Robin had lost his imagination and, he just really loved it. And I thought it was a beautiful story as well. And I think Ewan McGregor just sweeps you away. You totally believe that this is all going on in his life. I thought it was great. What about you? You've got some telly, haven't you?
Yeah, telly. So all my regular shows have finished, wrapped up for the Christmas season. Shame, shame. People still watch TV over Christmas, people. that finishes in the US market, as you know, in November because they cut it off from Thanksgiving because they think no one does anything after Thanksgiving. So I've had to sort of search around for things to look at online. And on Netflix, I found a series called Pine Gap. Yes. Now, I don't know. And I watched it all and then I thought about it and then I thought about it some more and then I Googled it and I saw that it's actually already been on the ABC in Australia and then they put it on Netflix globally. So I thought it was intriguing for Aussie. So when I was in the States, I met someone and they said, oh, yeah, we lived in Alice Springs. And I said, oh, what were you doing in Alice Springs? They said, oh, we were at Pine Gap. And I was like, oh, okay, now you're a spy. I didn't say it like that, but that's immediately what I thought.
Yeah.
So I thought it was intriguing for Aussies, the series, I think it's 6 episodes or 8 episodes or something. It's when it started, I couldn't tell whether I was cringing or not cringing, this combination of American and Australian accents and then some big, wide, sweeping scenes of the outback, around Alice and stuff. But I don't know, I kind of got into it. What I would say is it shows this suspenseful spy thriller story about Pine Gap, which is a station that the Americans have in the middle of Australia, in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And it's got sort of the cast is kind of half and half. There's Americans and Aussies. I liked it, but 90% of the Australian management positions in the spy world were held by women, which I thought was perhaps unrealistic.
Right.
But I thought it was good for a TV show to have that, aspirational perhaps, like all the big decision makers were women, which I thought was sort of, I kept thinking, oh, that can't really be true. And I did like the drone footage of the Aussie Outback, I thought. And it was kind of a very modern political story on what was going on. I don't know. I started off cringing, although one of the guys with American accents, I was thinking, oh, he's not making that American accent really deliver. And so I Googled him later and he was British. I was thinking, got him, nailed him. But apart from that, I kind of really enjoyed it. It's just sort of some mind to switch off your mind and have a look. Did you see it?
No, I haven't seen it, but I've seen the shorts of it, but I haven't seen it. Do you think it's something I could watch with my entire family?
Yes, it totally is. It is something you could watch with your entire family. You could make it an Aussie Christmas Netflix special, or if you need it, if it's raining one day in the cricket,
excellent,
you can have a look. But yeah, no, it's definitely one of those shows you can watch with the entire family, and it's got sort of, it brings lots of different things in. Now, I look, in the end, I liked it. In the beginning, I didn't know how I was feeling. You know what you kind of feel? I sometimes feel about Australia trying to do drama stuff. Like, I think Australia gets comedy and sort of everyday stuff quite good, but dramatic things and spy things, I don't know, it's just, maybe it's a personal cultural moment that I have, that I don't think, when I look at big TV shows like that, I don't always think we get it right, but I quite enjoyed it.
Cool.
It was good.
Okay, just quickly, Nikki, because I have to go because it's time for me to get to work, but listening to, I have put a little clip for Paul Kelly, great interview that was on SBS, and for those Australians out there who would all be well aware who Paul Kelly the musician is, and that the great Australian song How to Make Gravy, which is a true Christmas, you know, anthem in Australia. But there was a great little interview on SBS about Paul Kelly, and I'll include the link there. I really loved it, and it's well worth going and have a look at. What about you? What are you listening to?
Okay, I'm listening to Surviving Y2K. So our friend from Missing Richard Simmons, we remember him. We talked about him a lot. Well, he's rebranded his podcast and called it Headlong. So Missing Richard Simmons was season one of Headlong. And the idea is that each season he's going to dive headlong into a new topic. So last season it was Richard Simmons, and this season it's Y2K and the drama surrounding Y2K, which you would remember in Australia.
I remember that. I was pregnant. Yes, I was pregnant with number one.
Goodness.
And I still remember the drama. Do you know, everyone thought the power was going to go off and the world was going to shut down.
Well, yeah, and I think that we thought that in Australia, but if you listen to the interviews they did with Americans, they took it to a whole other level. You really understand where the prepper culture comes from when they talked about how they were preparing and going off grid for Y2K. But obviously, because he's quite clever at what he does, it's more of a personal story for him. So it's about what happened to him over the Y2K period, as well as what was happening in the world. So I've quite enjoyed it. The other thing, quickly, as my podcast season's winding down and not as many people are releasing podcasts over the season, is that there are three daily podcasts I listen to now. So one is The Daily, New York Times must listen. You listen, right? Best podcast,
yes.
Great podcast, The Daily. Okay, so Washington Post now has a daily podcast as well called Post Reports. It's hosted by a female. I think they've done that deliberately. And it's very similar to The Daily. And the third one I listen to, which I've listened to for a while and I do enjoy, is called Today Explained. And it's done by Vox. And it's a bit more of a pop culture feel. It's really interesting because the three podcasts, they cover a lot of the same sort of stories in different orders on different days. But the way they do it and their production values and the way that they interview people and introduce the subjects and close them up is all very different. So if you're wanting a little bit of a different view on any of the daily news, those three, and they're sort of all 20 to 25 minutes each per day. So easy to get through.
Oh, sounds good.
So that's my tips.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Good.
So, and that is it for 2018.
Oh, Merry Christmas, Nikki Moffat.
Merry Christmas, Kirsty Rice. And next time we speak, you will have had a birthday.
Oh, yes. Well, hopefully I get to speak to you again before then. But, yeah, the next time we speak.
Yes. Do a podcast.
I'll talk to you later.
Well, have a good one.
Thanks.
Enjoy the rocky road. Bye. Hi, everyone. It's Nikki. We're in such a rush to finish up today so Kirsty could get to work, very important, that we forgot to say we wish everybody that listens to the podcast a very happy Christmas or holiday season or whatever you might be celebrating, even if you're just having a little break. The other thing that we always do at the end of the show that we forgot was to say, please, pretty please, what we'd like best for Christmas is if you could leave us a review. Reviews are important so they can help other people find us and listen to the podcast too. So if you'd like to give us a Christmas present, we'd love for you to give us a review. Thanks, guys. Speak to you next year. Bye.